Chapter 111. A rescue and a catastrophe. Friend Rodden drove on then to Mr. Moss's mansion in Cursitor Street, and was duly inducted into that dismal place of hospitality. Morning was breaking over the cheerful housetops of Chancery Lane as the rattling cab woke up the echoes there. A little pink-eyed Jew boy, with a head as ruddy as the rising morn, let the party into the house, and Rodden was welcomed to the ground-floor apartments by Mr. Moss, his traveling companion and host, who cheerfully asked him if he would like a glass of something warm after his drive. The colonel was not so depressed as some mortals would be, who, quitting a palace and a place in Uxer, find themselves barred into a sponging house. For, if the truth must be told, he had been a lodger at Mr. Moss's establishment once or twice before. We have not thought it necessary in the previous course of this narrative to mention these trivial little domestic incidents. But the reader may be assured that they can't unfrequently occur in the life of a man who lives on nothing a year. Upon his first visit to Mr. Moss, the colonel, then a bachelor, had been liberated by the generosity of his aunt. On the second mishap, little Becky, with the greatest spirit and kindness, had borrowed a sum of money from Lord Southdown, and had coaxed her husband's creditor, who was her shawl, velvet gown, lace pocket handkerchief, trinket, and gimcrack purveyor, indeed, to take a portion of the sum claimed, and Rodden's promissory note for the remainder. So on both these occasions the capture and release had been conducted with the utmost gallantry on all sides, and Moss and the colonel were therefore on the very best of terms. "You'll find your old bed, colonel, and everything comfortable," that gentleman said, "as I may honestly say. You may be pretty sure it's kept aired, and by the best of company too. It was slept in the night afore last by the Honorable Captain Famish, of the 50th Dragoons, whose mar took him out, after a fortnight, just to punish him," she said. "But, law bless you, I promise you, he punished my champagne, and had a party here every night reglar tip-top swells, down from the clubs and the West End Captain Rag, the Honorable Deuces, who lives in the Temple, and some fellers as knows a good glass of wine, I warrant you. I've got a Doctor of Divinity upstairs, 5 gents in the coffee room, and Mrs. Moss has a tabli d'hote at 5:30, and a little cards or music afterwards, when we shall be most happy to see you." "I'll ring when I want anything," said Rodden, and went quietly to his bedroom. He was an old soldier, we have said, and not to be disturbed by any little shocks of fate. A weaker man would have sent off a letter to his wife on the instant of his capture. "But what is the use of disturbing her night's rest?" thought Rodden. "She won't know whether I am in my room or not. It will be time enough to write to her when she has had her sleep out, and I have had mine. It's only 170, and the deuce is in it, if we can't raise that." And so, thinking about little Rodden, whom he would not have known that he was in such a queer place, the colonel turned into the bed lately occupied by Captain Famish and fell asleep. It was 10 o'clock when he woke up, and the ruddy-headed youth brought him, with conscious pride, a fine silver dressing case, wherewith he might perform the operation of shaving. Indeed, Mr. Moss's house, though somewhat dirty, was splendid throughout. There were dirty trays, and wine coolers and permanents on the sideboard, huge dirty gilt cornices, with dingy yellow satin hangings to the barred windows which looked into Cursitor Street vast, and dirty gilt picture frames surrounding pieces sporting and sacred, all of which works were by the greatest masters, and fetched the greatest prices too, in the bill transactions, in the course of which they were sold, and bought over and over again. The colonel's breakfast was served to him in the same dingy and gorgeous plated ware. Miss Moss, a dark-eyed maid in curl papers, appeared with the teapot, and, smiling, asked the colonel how he had slept. And she brought him in the morning post, with the names of all the great people who had figured at Lord Stang's entertainment the night before. It contained a brilliant account of the festivities, and of the beautiful and accomplished Mrs. Rawdon Crawley's admirable personifications. After a lively chat with this lady who sat on the edge of the breakfast table in an easy attitude displaying the drapery of her stocking, and an ex-white satin shoe, which was down at heel, Colonel Crawley called for pens and ink, and paper, and being asked how many sheets, chose one which was brought to him between Miss Moss's own finger and thumb. Many a sheet had that dark-eyed damsel brought in. Many a poor fellow had scrawled and blotted hurried lines of entreaty, and paced up and down that awful room until his messenger brought back the reply. Poor men always use messengers instead of the post. Who has not had their letters, with the wafers wet, and the announcement, that a person is waiting in the hall? Now on the score of his application, Rawdon had not many misgivings. Dear Becky, Rawdon wrote, I hope you slept well. Don't be frightened, if I don't bring you in your coffee. Last night as I was coming home smoking, I met with an accident. I was nabbed by Moss of Cursitor Street, from whose guilt, and splendid parlor I write this the same, that had me this time 2 years. Miss Moss brought in my tea. She is grown very fat, and, as usual, had her stockings down at heel. It's Nathan's business 150 with costs, 170. Please send me my desk and some cloths. I'm in pumps, and a white tie,
something like Miss M's stockings,
I've 70 in it. And as soon as you get this, drive to Nathan's, offer him 75 down, and ask him to renew. Say I'll take wine. We may as well have some dinner sherry, but not pictures, they're too dear. If he won't stand it, take my ticker and such of your things as you can spare, and send them to balls. We must, of course, have the sum tonight. It won't do to let it stand over, as tomorrow's Sunday. The beds here are not very clean, and there may be other things out against me. I'm glad it and Rawdon Saturday for coming home. God bless you. Yours in haste, R.C.P. S.S. Make haste and come. This letter, sealed with a wafer, was dispatched by one of the messengers who are always hanging about Mr. Moss's establishment, and Rawdon, having seen him depart, went out in the courtyard, and smoked his cigar with a tolerably easy mind in spite of the bars overhead, for Mr. Moss's courtyard is railed in like a cage, lest the gentlemen who are boarding with him should take a fancy to escape from his hospitality. 3 hours, he calculated, would be the utmost time required before Becky should arrive and open his prison doors, and he passed these pretty cheerfully in smoking, in reading the paper, and in the coffee room with an acquaintance, Captain Walker, who happened to be there, and with whom he cut for sixpences for some hours, with pretty equal luck on either side. But the day passed away, and no messenger returned, no Becky. Mr. Moss's tabli d'hôte was served at the appointed hour of 5:30, when such of the gentlemen lodging in the house as could afford to pay for the banquet came, and partook of it in the splendid front parlor before described, and with which Mr. Crawley's temporary lodging communicated, when Miss M,
as her papa called her,
appeared without the curl papers of the morning, and Mrs. M did the honors of a prime boiled leg of mutton and turnips, of which the colonel ate with a very faint appetite. Asked whether he would tand a bottle of champagne for the company, he consented, and the ladies drank to his health, and Mr. Moss, in the most polite manner, looked towards him. In the midst of this repast, however, the doorbell was heard. Young Moss of the ruddy hair rose up with the keys, and answered the summons, and coming back, told the colonel that the messenger had returned with a bag, a desk and a letter, which he gave him. Oh ceremony, colonel, I beg, said Mrs. Moss with a wave of her hand, and he opened the letter rather tremulously. It was a beautiful letter, highly scented, on a pink paper, and with a light green seal. Mon pauvre cher petit,
Mrs. Crawley wrote, I could not sleep one wink for thinking of what had become of my odious old monster, and only got to rest in the morning after sending for Mr. Blench, for I was in a fever, who gave me a composing draft and left orders with Finette that I should be disturbed on no account. So that my poor old man's messenger, who had been mauvais mine Finette says, and sent hoit la Genever, remained in the hall for some hours waiting my bell. You may fancy my state, when I read your poor dear old ill-spelt letter. Ill as I was, I instantly called for the carriage, and as soon as I was dressed, though I couldn't drink a drop of chocolate, I assure you I couldn't without my monster, to bring it to me, I drove enter a tear to Nathan's. I saw him, I wept, I cried, I fell at his odious knees. Nothing would mollify the horrid man. He would have all the money, he said, or keep my poor monster in prison. I drove home with the intention of paying that thrice visite shame on uncle when every trinket I have should be at your disposal, though they would not fetch £100, for some, you know, are with seat your uncle already, and found Myler there with the Bulgarian old sheep-faced monster, who had come to compliment me upon last night's performances. Paddington came in too, drawling and lisping and twiddling his hair, so did Champignac, and his chef everybody with foison of compliments, and pretty speeches plaguing poor me, who longed to be rid of them, and was thinking every moment of the time of mon pauvre prisoner. When they were gone, I went down on my knees to Myler, told him we were going to pawn everything, and begged and prayed him to give me £200. He pished and sawed in a fury, told me not to be such a fool as to pawn, and said he would see whether he could lend me the money. At last he went away, promising that he would send it me in the morning, when I will bring it to my poor old monster with a kiss from his affectionate Becky. I am writing in bed. Oh, I have such a headache and such a heartache. When Rawdon read over this letter, he turned so red, and looked so savage, that the company at the table don't easily perceive that bad news had reached him. All his suspicions, which he had been trying to banish, returned upon him. She could not even go out and sell her trinkets to free him. She could laugh and talk about compliments paid to her whilst he was in prison. Who had put him there? Wenham had walked with him. Was there, he could hardly bear to think of what he suspected. Leaving the room hurriedly, he ran into his own, opened his desk, wrote two hurried lines, which he directed to Sir Peter Lady Crawley, and bade the messenger carry them at once to Gaunt Street, bidding him to take a cab, and promising him a guinea if he was back in an hour. In the note he besought his dear brother and sister, for the sake of God, for the sake of his dear child and his honor, to come to him and relieve him from his difficulty. He was in prison, he wanted £100. To set him free, he entreated them to come to him. He went back to the dining room, after dispatching his messenger, and called for more wine. He laughed and talked with a strange boisterousness, as the people thought. Sometimes he laughed madly at his own fears, and went on drinking for an hour, listening all the while for the carriage which was to bring his fate back. At the expiration of that time, wheels were heard whirling up to the gate. The young janitor went out with his gate keys. It was a lady whom he let in at the bailiff's door. Colonel Crawley, she said, trembling very much. He, with a knowing look, locked the outer door upon her, then unlocked, and opened the inner one, and calling out, Colonel, you're wanted, led her into the back parlor, which he occupied. Rawdon came in from the dining parlor, where all those people were carousing, into his back room, a flare of coarse light following him into the apartment where the lady stood, still very nervous. It is I, Rawdon, she said in a timid voice, which she strove to render cheerful. T is Jane. Rawdon was quite overcome by that kind voice and presence. He ran up to her, caught her in his arms, gasped out some inarticulate words of thanks, and fairly sobbed on her shoulder. She did not know the cause of his emotion. The bills of Mr. Moss were quickly settled, perhaps to the disappointment of that gentleman, who had counted on having the colonel as his guest over Sunday at least, and Jane, with beaming smiles and happiness in her eyes, carried away Rawdon from the bailiff's house, and they went homewards in the cab in which he had hastened to his release. It was gone to a parliamentary dinner, she said, when Rawdon's note came, and so, dear Rawdon, I came myself, and she put her kind hand in his. Perhaps it was well for Rawdon Crawley that Pitt was away at that dinner. Rawdon thanked his sister 100 times, and with an ardor of gratitude which touched and almost alarmed that soft-hearted woman. Oh, said he, in his rude, artless way, you don't know how I'm changed since I've known you, and little Roddy. I'd like to change somehow. You see, I want to be, he did not finish the sentence, but she could interpret it. And that night, after he left her, and as she sat by her own little boy's bed, she prayed humbly for that poor way-worn sinner. Rawdon left her, and walked home rapidly. It was 9 o'clock at night. He ran across the streets and the great squares of Vanity Fair, and at length, came up breathless opposite his own house. He started back, and fell against the railings, trembling as he looked up. The drawing-room windows were blazing with light. As he had said, that she was in bed and ill. He stood there for some time, the light from the rooms on his pale face. He took out his door key, and let himself into the house. He could hear laughter in the upper rooms. He was in the ball dress in which he had been captured the night before. He went silently up the stairs, leaning against the banisters at the stairhead. Nobody was stirring in the house besides all the servants had been sent away. Rawdon heard laughter within laughter and singing. Becky was singing a snatch of the song of the night before. A hoarse voice shouted, "Brava! Brava!" It was Lord Stans. Rawdon opened the door and went in. A little table with a dinner was laid out and wine and plate. Stan was hanging over the sofa on which Becky sat. The wretched woman was in a brilliant full toilette, her arms and all her fingers sparkling with bracelets and rings, and the brilliance on her breast which Stan had given her. He had her hand in his, and was bowing over it to kiss it, when Becky started up with a faint scream as she caught sight of Rawdon's white face. At the next instant she tried a smile, a horrid smile, as if to welcome her husband, and Stan rose up, grinding his teeth, pale, and with fury in his looks. He, too, attempted a laugh, and came forward holding out his hand. What, come back? How do you do, Crawley? He said, the nerves of his mouth twitching as he tried to grin at the intruder. There was that in Rawdon's face which caused Becky to fling herself before him. I'm innocent, Rawdon, she said. Before God, I am innocent. She clung hold of his coat, of his hands. Her own were all covered with serpents, and rings, and baubles. I'm innocent. Say I am innocent, she said to Lord Stan. He thought a trap had been laid for him, and was as furious with the wife as with the husband. Ooh, innocent. Damn you, he screamed out. Ooh, innocent. Why, every trinket you have on your body is paid for by me. I have given you thousands of pounds, which this fellow has spent and for which he has sold you. Innocent, bye. You're as innocent as your mother, the ballet girl, and your husband. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.